Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
We're back. Welcome to Upfront on Football Ramble Presents. I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
Gruner. Van der Sonde. Drives it across. Brilliant header. Viviana Miedema.
Luka Martins will pick up this loose ball. A little bit of a nudge in the back. Luka Martins! Four for Barcelona. New year, more upsets. Arsenal come unstuck at Birmingham, who pick up their first WSL win in 14 months. Also a first clean sheet, pretty mad. And we also run the rule over the January transfer window and wonder which players can make the difference for teams around Europe in 2022. And after an eventful Christmas, what does the future look like for Coventry United? Eventful Christmas. I feel like we all had somewhat eventful Christmases. Rachel, how was your Christmas? I heard it was a pretty positive one.
I had a lovely Christmas at home with my family. And then New Year came, New Year, new me, and I resolved to be more positive by starting with a positive COVID test. So January 1st that's how I started my year. But, you know, I'll take the positives from that. It's out of the way now.
And best time to get it when there's no WSL football on, so you're not missing any work, missing any action.
I had, you know, three games to cover at the weekend that I obviously couldn't do, but then...
Oh, you weren't out by the weekend? I thought you were back out.
No, I flew back on Sunday.
Oh,
but they were, all the ones we were doing were called off, bar the one Sophie did, so actually it turned out fine.
Nice. And you're feeling good, you're safe, you're well, that's the main thing.
I am safe and well. I had my jab, get boosted, guys, and I was fine. It was just a bit of a head cold. I'm over it.
Good to hear. I'm glad. And your Christmas, Chloe, eventful?
Oh, phenomenal Christmas. Spent it with
one of the best
younger brother, because my entire family decided to come down with COVID on Christmas Day.
Oh,
so
mate.
What a gift. But it was the first time that I cooked Christmas dinner. and whoa, no one died. So
it went well then?
I'm taking that as a win.
What
yeah,
did you cook though?
Yeah, I want to know.
If it's pizza, then...
Well, I've only got one oven and I've never done it before. And there's a lot of things with timings and what yes, goes in mm-hmm, and how to get it out and whatever. So I just focused on the meat and potatoes.
Perfect.
And sacked off the carrots and... Yeah.
So no vegetables. It was very beige Christmas in the Morgan household.
It was very, very beige, but also it was the best bits. So I'm not even...
Best bits of beige.
Not
apparently,
even sorry about that. Yeah, it was gorgeous.
Well done, you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Wow, well done.
What about you, Flamantic? How was yours?
It was great. Was it great? Yeah, it was all right. It was just a strange one. I'm sure lots of people listening had a similar vibe. Just like, I think with the whole sort of race against time to not get COVID in the lead up to Christmas, which I managed not to do. I had COVID in November. I kind of managed to avoid the squid game of not getting it before Christmas. But it just felt like it still wasn't a very fun Christmas because so many people did have COVID.
Careful Christmas.
And you sort of, even if you were with family, you had this sort of lingering thing in the background, like looking around the room thinking, which of us might have COVID right now? Yeah, it was a bit strange. Mm. My brother's over from the States, so he's kind of panicked about getting COVID. So far, so good. So yeah, I think it was a weird one. It was a weird one all round. And now here we are in 2022, and we're another year into this.
Biggest year
world
of football in England for, you know, women's football in England.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
So that's exciting, I suppose.
I'm looking forward to the next couple of months, and I think what bodes well is first weekend of WSL action kind of started off with a bang.
Oh yes.
Because I looked at the fixture list that remained and thought, oh, it's not very exciting, is it? But actually I was at Birmingham City Arsenal on the weekend and that bought loads and loads of drama. And unfortunately, I know Birmingham City fans might listen to this and think it's a bit of an insult, but on the train up, I'd kind of like pre-written a piece all about Birmingham on the assumption that they were going to lose that game, which I think most of their
so
fans...
So you're the reason.
And most people would have thought they were. And I had to completely rewrite the whole thing, basically actually start again and bin that and write a piece about how bad Arsenal were and how good Birmingham were and how Arsenal seemingly are potentially in a bit of a crisis since that FA Cup final. They've lost 4 out of 5 games in all competitions. And I think for me, the biggest thing I took away from that game on Sunday is they are not playing like a team. They are massively playing like individuals. And I think Jonas Edvald sort of hinted at that afterwards, talking about players walking, not playing together as a unit, not doing what they've done so well this season. Morale looked shockingly low. Players looked miserable. And that, to me, is a sign of a lot of problems in the camp. So, yeah, it's an interesting one going forward. But Birmingham, what a performance from start to finish.
That's probably the biggest thing is, yes, Arsenal played really badly, but Birmingham played really well. And I think half of the reason Arsenal played so badly was because Birmingham were playing so well, because they pressed so well. Everybody knew their job. Everybody knew exactly what they had to do. Bodies on the line. So it wasn't like a smash and grab.
It was really good.
You look at those stats. Birmingham had significantly less possession and Arsenal, I think, had 2 shots on target and Birmingham had 7. So, you know, they did really, really well with the ball when they had the ball. And when they didn't have the ball, they made life very, very difficult for Arsenal. And I think you know, they have always been a team that will put their bodies on the line for each other and that will do absolutely everything for each other. And I think what Carter and Bignett have maybe brought into this team is a belief. Like they've given them that kind of, not only do we know that you're going to go out there and work hard, but like you can actually go out there and win games. And I think that was really evident against Arsenal. I thought maybe the game against Man City, when they played really well, I know they lost, but they played well, could have just been the new manager bounce. But actually, I think their performances have been, I know they lost against Leicester, but they have consistently improved, which I think is probably really important. And scalping a team like Arsenal is going to do wonders for the confidence, because now it's no longer about who wins between Birmingham and Leicester. Now it's kind of any team. Any team could potentially be beaten. So I think it's huge. And I think it makes the relegation battle very, very exciting.
I think what's also great, sorry, just to jump in, Chloe, is talk about Carter and Bignall and what they've done to block out the noise. Noise from people like myself basically saying, well, they're dead set to go down, so don't even bother. And also the noise about everything that's going on at the club at the moment and what's been going on for the past year, which as a player must be really hard to ignore. But how they've managed to basically just focus as a group and say it's about us, it's about the matches, it's about the games, not about anyone else, is really impressive. because that takes a lot of skill to be able to bring people together and block out all of that. But I think it's they've always got an advantage in a way, because I think the pressure is off them. I think, you know, like you said, you're going up there on the train expecting that it's going to be an absolute Arsenal show. And I think even the commentators were saying, you know, this is a big task for Birmingham. Not sure how they're going to fare here. Arsenal pretty much going to walk away with the points. And that was before we'd even got the kickoff started. So, and I think it sort of helps the players in a way, kind of, you know, you take that pressure off. You're not expected to do anything. You're expected realistically to kind of lose that game when you're playing someone like Arsenal. And so the players have a little bit more freedom, I think, of expression, just to go into the game thinking, do you know what? Why the hell not? We're the underdogs here. Let's do what we can. And I think, you know, they started on the front foot. I mean, getting two goals within the first half, no one was expecting that. And I think, you know, normally you'd say, okay, well, Arsenal are probably going to come out in the second half and absolutely hammer home, you know, three goals and just finish this thing off. But, you know, they were so resolute. They were so, like you were saying, they were so together. They were so, you know, focused as a team, so cohesive that they wanted to get, you know, they wanted to protect that lead, and they did. And credit to them. It definitely wasn't a smash and grab. It was a fantastic performance. Arsenal had tons of time to even just rescue a point, and they showed nothing. And I wrote in my piece about, it's hard not to over-egg it, but it does seem like the absence of Leah Williamson, and when she picked up that injury at Spurs, not just the ability as a defender, because Jem Beattie has not been great the last couple of games, and the partnership now is completely broken. You know, they've worked with Lotta Womamoy in that position. I think Leah Valti's played some time there, and then we saw Simone Boy on Sunday and it was terrible. But it's actually just the leadership that she brings. Obviously, Kim Little wears the armband, but there's that personality, there's that vocalness, there's that energy and that leadership that Williamson brings, especially to the back line, which seems completely absent now.
Yeah, and I think we've seen that in other top teams as well. It's a problem if you're so reliant on one player. And not only like, yes, obviously she's a very, very good player, but you see that with Chelsea when Magda Eriksson's out, the team kind of crumbled a little bit last season. And you shouldn't, with the depth that these squads have, it shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't be like Jenga, where you pull out the wrong piece and the whole thing collapses. You know, you've got so many other pieces in there. They should be able to manage without her. I kind of had a think about this when I saw the result about Arsenal and what's happened. And I think they obviously started the season on a big high. You know, you had a number of players coming back from the Olympics confident. I know the Netherlands didn't do as well as they wanted, but God, Viv had a pretty good tournament. So you players like that coming back confident. You had the new manager bounce, I think, probably came at the perfect time playing a team like Chelsea. So scalping them early on in the league was huge. They went on to beat Man City. For me, the confidence then was knocked when they got absolutely schooled by Barcelona in October. And I think in the future performances, I know they still won games, but there were signs, there were things there that you were a bit like, you know, that's not working the way it normally is. They're not controlling the matches maybe the way they normally would. Then the Williamson knock and the draw against Spurs, and that kind of seems to have derailed them a little bit. Their confidence has been knocked. And I know we talk a lot about big teams having confidence, but big teams, when they get their confidence knocked, it hits them the same way it hits other teams, you know. And maybe the fact that they've not been losing together, they're not able to find solutions to problems at the moment because they haven't really had to deal with them as much. So for me, I wonder if Jonas Eidevall was really annoyed about the fact that the Brighton game was postponed. And part of me wonders, was he hoping to get a win in under his belt before that half of the season ended to change the kind of mindset going into the Christmas break? It didn't happen. They went in off the back of a horrific Hoffenheim performance and have kind of picked up where they left off. So it's a
big
job. And
it was a long break as well, and they didn't come back in. I know they had some COVID cases over Christmas, but they didn't come back in until like the 2nd of January. And you had teams like Leicester and Reading coming in on the sort of 28th, 29th. I think Birmingham probably came in at that time as well. So there wasn't a lot of time. They're missing a few players as well who are in the Australian squad for the Asia Cup. Iwabuchi will be going out there as well. So it's weird time. And you look at what they need to do now, and they haven't got a lot of time to bounce back. They've got a Conti Cup quarterfinal against United. They're going to be playing City soon. Then they've got the huge game against Chelsea on the 13th of Feb. They've got quarterfinal in the Champions League in March against Wolfsburg. They need to rescue something quite quickly. Probably going to bring in a defender this window. Maybe bring in Sina Baxenius up front. We'll touch on that, what that means for Miedemar. But I mean, Chloe, what do you think they need to do now to regroup and just find some form again?
I think it's so important, I think, to sort of stop the flow. I think once you get into this kind of losing mentality, and it doesn't matter whether you're at elite level or grassroots level, once you get into losing the mentality, it's very easy just to continue to go downhill until you start to hit rock bottom. And I think, you know, for a team like Arsenal, there was so much expectation from them at the start of the league, and they started off on such a good foot. But I think now what they need to do is just sort of, it's almost like cut the loss now, you know, start again. There needs to be this kind of refreshing moment that you think, okay, yeah, we've had a bit of a shit show, but it stops now. And I think, you know, you're saying there's a couple of players out and maybe, you know, COVID's been affecting the squad and things like that, but you've still got some big names there. You've got the Miedemars, you've got the Little. And I think, you know, even when you're looking at some of the chances that Miedemar was still creating, and you could see the frustration from Miedemar. And I, you know, when I look at the kind of performance that, that she had, I think she seemed to be one of the only players who was really giving some kind of effort above the other players. And yeah, it's hard to, but I think you need to group around each other. You need to get hold of each other and start saying, you know, it was bad, but let's not make this continue, because you're going to slowly start to slip down the league table, and you can't be affording to give up points against Birmingham. That's just not okay.
I think as well, one game at a time. And I know that sounds cliche because that's always what managers say, but you touched on all of the big fixtures coming up, all of the various different competitions that they're still in. They can't actually really afford to think about that. They can't afford to think about a big game against Chelsea in February or the fact that they're playing Man City soon. They just need to focus on the next game. The next game being Conti Cup. After that game, then they focus on Reading, I think they're facing this weekend. I just don't think they can afford to look beyond. And I know that's hard, and they probably are. But I think when you're trying to stop, like you say, this kind of slide, it's just about the next game and getting a win.
Circle back to Birmingham, though, quickly. I'm obviously eating my words because I gave them no chance of hell, especially after that Leicester City win just before the break, Leicester City beating Birmingham 2-0. I thought that was Birmingham done. I thought that was kind of, you know, they're going to crumble now. We've got a serious relegation battle now on our hands again. And do you guys think that Birmingham are now favourites in that fight? Because it seems like they've got not only the sort of motivation and the team spirit, but they're playing really good football as well.
Yeah, I mean, it does make it much more exciting, because it does feel a bit like if they can beat Arsenal, they can beat anyone. But then you do have to look at the fact that Arsenal were an absolute shambles. But you're right, Birmingham did play. They're playing well. They're playing a really nice style of football. I think it'll be interesting to see who comes in the transfer window and whether Leicester strengthen. I know they've brought in a couple, but
They're very young, sort of like up-and-coming players, not necessarily someone you'd look at, you know, like a Louise Quinn, like someone with loads of experience. You think these are the sort of players that can get you out of a fight like this.
Yeah, but what I think Leicester are missing, and we see it in a lot of their results, is a finisher. And I know they have strikers, but I think bringing in someone who, like you say, has that experience, that's what I feel is missing in some of their results. And we've seen them, you know, 1-0 to Reading. I know they pressed them hard in the second half. They lost last gasp winner from Brighton, you know, so they're on the cusp as well. So I think it is going to, I think what will be a change, or what could change things for them, is who they potentially bring into the transfer window. And then, you know, it will be a real battle between them and Birmingham.
I agree. I mean, I don't think Birmingham is safe by any means. I mean, I think it's going to come down to exactly how it has been for the last few seasons, where it is just that point. It's that last game of the last game of the season. And, you know, it's already so tight with Villa and Leicester there. And, you know, Birmingham have had their struggles. They've always kind of been in the last, you know, couple of spaces and battling off relegation, and they've fought it off every single time. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do the same again. But I think, you know, what we need to see now is what's going to happen with Birmingham in the next game. Is this just going to be a flash in the pan, or is this going to be a consistent thing? They start to think, you know what, actually, we might have a chance here of even sort of pushing ourselves further up the table and getting out of, you know, the danger zone. But, you know, it'll be interesting for Leicester, because I think they've just not found form. And I think everyone was expecting so much more from them this season, because they seem to have big backing. There was loads of promo. They'd sort of been brought in a few players. But I kind of think that they've not, I don't think they were ready really to go into the WSL as I think we all thought they would be. I don't think they had that great a recruitment session in summer to kind of have that really strong WSL experience and those big characters to kind of, you know, really see out that first difficult, tumultuous first season. So I think they're the ones that I'm slightly more concerned about. And I think it would be, I mean, it'd be interesting, because I think that'll be the first time that you've ever had a championship club go up and go down in the first in the first season. So yeah, I think it's going to go down to the wire.
And Birmingham once again, and Smith's in there too. Oh, it's number two for Birmingham City, and it's Christy Murray with a goal. Double their lead against the leaders, Arsenal.
Focused quickly on Vivianne Miedema. Reports that she is interested, you know, there's interest there from Barcelona and PSG, which isn't surprising. She's obviously out of contract in the summer, as is Williamson. The rumours that Stina Blackstenius is potentially going to be revealed this week as an Arsenal player would probably, to me, signal that Miedema is leaving in the summer, with Blackstenius brought in as her replacement, because with the number of clubs that were also interested in Blackstenius, you'd think she would go to Arsenal on the assumption she's going to be a starter there with the name like she has. So where do Arsenal go from here in terms of Miedema? Because that's going to be a huge, huge, you know, person to fill on your team, even with the likes of Blackstenius coming in. And also for the remainder of the season now, if you've got a player who's potentially sort of like one foot out the door, knows they're not going to sign a contract, you know, do you play her? Do you not play her? You've got to play her. But at the same time, it just feels like the team is so disjointed right now.
I would slightly disagree. And maybe it's because I just really want Viv Miedema to stay in the WSL. But in a recent article written by Tom Gary at The Telegraph, she said that obviously she hasn't ruled out staying at Arsenal. So there's not actually been any negotiations yet. They haven't come to her with an offer yet. But she said that she wants the club to show greater ambition for silverware by signing players that can help them win sport's biggest prizes. That means bringing in top players. It doesn't mean keeping her as one of the main strikers.
Didn't they do that over the summer? Was that...
What, with Nicky de Paris?
Well, Paris, Heath, Iwabuchi.
Heath was never long-term, though. I think, you know, I think it's not just that. I think, I know the squad has depth now, but we're seeing that isn't actually providing much at the moment, that depth, with players being out injured. So for me, I don't think it immediately signals that she's out. I think it could be a good thing. We could see a really great pairing up with the two of them. You don't know. And I also think a player like her, despite whether she's leaving at the end of the season or not, will be 100% focused on the pitch. I know people like to talk about how, you know, she doesn't like training and stuff like that, but from the pictures, from everything that's going on her social media, their social media, she seems pretty happy and pretty focused. And I think she will remain like that until the end of the season, whether she stays or not.
I think maybe a big focus is going to be on how things go from now until the end of the season. I think, you know, if you start to see similar performances to Sunday happening more regularly, I can see Miedema sort of saying, okay, well, maybe now.
I think there's
a
visible frustration, not about her not trying, because I think professional footballers 9 times out of 10 will always try because they're professional athletes. It's more a visible frustration, like you said, of wanting to play at a level and feeling like your teammates aren't matching that with you. Mm-hmm. Because I think so many times in games this season, and I know it is typical Miedema, it's why we love her, but there's a lot of hands in the air, especially on Sunday against Birmingham.
She's very dramatic, very expressive.
Yeah, a lot of hands on the air turning around saying, fuck are you guys doing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And I saw that. I mean, there was a chance, you know, she had that pullback. I think it was one of the chances that she had in the second half. And it was a great pullback. Kim Little, it was pretty much straight at the keeper, but it was still a great save. And you could see her just throwing her hands, flailing. And I think, yes, you want the drama, but also it's slightly unprofessional, because I think it's so evident that you're frustrated and miserable and upset with how the team are doing. And sometimes you just need to get behind them. But I think, like I said, if I think you start to see more and more performances like that, where she starts to feel that actually I'm at this level, the team aren't operating at this level because of X, Y and Z reasons, I could see her departing.
Yeah, it's an interesting one to keep an eye on. What do you guys think the top WSL sides need to do in this window? Chelsea have already signed one player, Russian left-back Alsu Abdelina. Very young player, I think, and a bit like Anik Nguyen. Probably won't start a whole bunch of games, but one for the future. Yeah, what do you think these sides need to do in order to kind of ensure they have enough depth going forward? COVID isn't out the window yet, so, you know, we've already seen it cause a few cancellations and issues in squads. Asia Cup means a lot of clubs are missing players. Arsenal still in the Champions League, Chelsea not in the Champions League, but we've got Conti Cup, we've got FA Cup, and we've got a very tense title race. So Chelsea are going to be without Sam Kerr and Ji-Soo Young, which is massive, especially for Kerr. So what do you think they need to do in this window?
I think Chelsea are okay depth-wise for those two positions. I still think they need to bring in more defence, like more experienced defenders, because that has definitely been their Achilles heel this season. And I mean, I'm pretty sure Magda Eriksson's injured, even though no one will say it out loud. But
Emma
she did,
Hayes and her mystery injuries.
But she did pick up a knock in the Wolfsburg game and has been pretty absent on most of Chelsea's social media and stuff, which is generally a big tell, by the way, guys. So I think, yeah, bringing in more experienced defence is going to be key. You are going to have players sat on the bench, I know, but that kind of depth, it's great having young players, but realistically, you need to have players who know that position and are comfortable in those positions and not kind of put in there for a couple of games to fill a gap. So for me, that's where Chelsea's biggest weakness is in defence at the moment and the depth of their defence.
United did want Blackstenius. Seems like she's going to go to Arsenal. That's a big loss for Manchester United because that could have been a season-defining player that you could bring in and could get them closer to the Champions League, could finally get them into Europe. But they're really lacking that, especially if Alicia Russo heads to the end of her cell, which it looks like she might do, link up with Casey Stoney. That's a lot of goals and attacking play and threat to go out your side. And it feels like Man United are slowly but surely becoming sort of like Ella Toon FC, and that's about it. A lot of reliance on her.
Massively. I think, you know, a signing like that would bring in a lot of firepower for Man United. And, you know, you can't rely on someone like Ella Toon. I mean, she's been absolutely phenomenal, but she's also young. And I think she also needs to have, you know, the competition, the challenge of people coming in and really challenging her to push on to that next level. So, you know, that'd be great for them to have that signing. But I think if it's between Man United and Arsenal at the moment, although saying that, if Arsenal aren't struggling to find form a little bit, and I'd be a little bit concerned if I was Blackstenius looking to sign Arsenal or looking to sign for Arsenal and then they lose to Birmingham. I'd be
you might be changing your mind, maybe tearing up that contract. I also think, I mean, she was linked to Spurs as well, which I think another team a bit like Manchester United that need goals because they don't score a lot of goals. They've played well and they've had a good season so far, but like Brighton, we see when the goals dry up, you really get punished. Brighton have lost their last three games and slipped now. I think they're in seventh in the table, and they started the season so well, were in third at one point. So without that, you know, consistent goal scorer, it's really hard to sustain the momentum that you have. Kind of looking elsewhere as well, we've seen Lyon really sort of try and fight back after losing the league title to PSG. They kind of thought, nah, that's not happening again. Strengthened in the summer, Endler, Brun, Daniel van der Donk. Do you guys think they have a strong chance at trying to pip Barcelona to the Champions League crown this season?
I think they'll still go far in the competition. I'm still not sure there's anyone out there who has figured out how to beat Barcelona yet.
I agree. There's literally nothing I could add. You've summed it up perfectly.
It is weird,
Barcelona
isn't it?
It's just like the supernova of the Champions League.
Do you think clubs need to sort of like come together and sort of like all gang up on
what,
Barcelona?
All-star team versus Barcelona.
But not only that, but just like share analysis and share secrets to be like, oh, well, this is what we did really badly. Don't do that, like, to have the best chance of beating them. Because when Lyon's sort of run and dynasty in the Champions League finally came to an end, you know, people were kind of coming up with this hashtag, like, anyone but Lyon, because it was kind of boring to see them win all the time. Do you think we're going to get to that point with Barcelona too, where we'll just be like, come on, like, someone just tell them how to do it?
Probably, but they also play such lovely football that it might not be for a while. I think, though, the likes of Lyon and stuff, in the past, they were the firepower. They were the ones scoring loads of goals. And where you saw them maybe a little bit weaker was in defence. And I think it's not so much about teams coming together. Like, they are beatable, Barcelona. I mean, don't ask me how, but I know they are. Every team is beatable. But I think it's just a case of having a good tactician, knowing the right setup against them, and how to play defensively and how to kind of cut out all of that, those quick passes. They are beatable, but I guess at the moment, a lot of the teams that we're seeing, like your Lyons, maybe haven't worked out that defensive setup yet because maybe they haven't had to do it as much in their league. So, yeah, I still think Barcelona are going to win the Champions League. It could be an interesting game against Real Madrid, though. So,
yeah, and I think actually, I mean, Lyon have got Juventus in the quarterfinals, but I think of all the sides that could beat Barcelona, it could be a side like Juventus because they're stubborn, they're well organised, they don't offer a lot going forward, but they set up very well. We saw them just absorb all that pressure against Chelsea. Chelsea struggled that night. They looked exhausted, but at the same time, they held strong, conceded a lot of shots and, you know, could have won it at one point on the break. And I feel like if a side like Juventus set up like that against Barcelona, like Arsenal did well in the first sort of 20 minutes or so against Barcelona at home before that really bad mistake at the back,
Like, that's the way to do it, is go direct, be really boring and route one and stubborn, and just play a territory game.
Wasn't it Hoffenheim who was like, or was it Koya, it was like 2-0 or something against Barcelona?
Yeah.
So it is those teams that have that experience of having to play that really defensive style of football. And it's not always pretty.
Yeah, exactly. Play
it's
ugly.
A tactic.
Yeah, it'll be interesting as well to see, because if Arsenal beat Wolfsburg, which I think is probably quite unlikely given how Wolfsburg have played against Chelsea in the group stages, they would face Barcelona again in the semi-final, which is not a good prospect.
They're having nightmares.
Jeez. And Juve will play either Bayern or PSG in their semi-final. So, yeah, it's a very interesting competition. We're not going to get to that stage for a few months now, so I'm sure we'll touch on it again at a later time. But if anyone has the state secrets on how to beat Barcelona, please get in touch, because we would love to know. Because someone's got to do it. Someone's got to be able to match it. Maybe it is Joe Montemiro's Juventus. Maybe it's going to be Wolfsburg if they beat Arsenal. Maybe it's going to be Real Madrid. I mean, they beat Manchester City and been brilliant in the league. But, I mean, in El Clasico at the Nou Camp, it's an exciting prospect. So we'll wait and see what happens.
Continues a run. That's a lovely ball, and the ball across. Still not cleared. Stanway sees the initial attempt blocked. Second time of asking. And there it is. Wow. Coombs goes for the strike. Look at that. Brighton, architects of their own downfall, but what a strike.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around the duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Thank you.
Something else that kicked off before Christmas, just before Christmas, was a bit of a weird one, a sad one as well. Coventry United, literally, I think it was like the 23rd of December. We're all obviously just preparing for Christmas. The WSL and Championship were going into a bit of a Christmas break. And it was revealed that the club were going to be entering into voluntary liquidation halfway through their first season as a fully professional club. Players and staff were told they're going to be losing their jobs, and it looked like the team was going to be sort of expunged from the season. And then in the 11th hour, just before the deadline, on the 4th of January, a new owner has come in. I think it's going to be signed off and completed this week. But Lewis Taylor, who is a local businessman based in the Midlands, he is the founder of an energy company, or CEO of an energy company based up there. He is coming in to rescue the club. Looks like that's all going to go through, fingers crossed. And he's going to be taking over so they can carry on existing. The players can come back. Although it does look like they're going to be given a 10-point deduction, which they are going to appeal it. And Taylor thinks they have a good chance at winning that appeal. It means they're on minus 4 points in the Championship. They're a fully professional side and at this present moment, staring down relegation. And the whole situation is kind of a bit rubbish, to be honest. And just leaves a bit of a nasty taste in your mouth, because I think a lot of us were probably surprised when they decided to go fully professional this season. I mean, Chloe, you would know more than any of us just how perhaps surprising that move was. So then to see all of that unravel and see where they are now, and potentially, you know, it's great that they've been rescued, but, you know, at what cost, I guess?
They were definitely a surprise. I think, you know, at the start of the season, you know, you're expecting certain clubs to be able to go full time. You expected Charlton, you know, some of the bigger names there with the sort of bigger followings and the Premier League backing. But, you know, for a club like Coventry that doesn't have, you know, a big name really, you know, when we play games there, they haven't really had that many bums on seats at all. Their social media isn't sort of flying and popping off all the time. And, you know, we were shocked really that they were thinking about going full time, because it just seemed like a very premature decision or a time to really do that. And I think it was even more shocking when you started to hear sort of rumours about the potential salaries that some of the players in this club were on. And they were, you know, salaries at the very top end of the Championship, you know, really decent salaries that you might even expect in the WSL. So we were thinking, OK, well...
They were signing big players as well, like Wilkinson, who'd had a brilliant season at Sheffield United.
Yeah.
Going to Coventry United, I thought that was a really like interesting signing. And you thought, how can they afford her, you know?
Well, it was on big money. And I think that's what was so shocking. And we were thinking, OK, this, the investor who's come in now is going to have to absolutely fork out, put their hand in their pocket, because, you know, Coventry aren't at a situation where it's just, you know, going to need a little bit of a top up. They're going to have to start from the absolute beginning. So... you know, it's not really surprising that we've reached a situation now that we've got an investor who, you know, thought they were going to maybe turn the club around and start producing this really profitable business within 6 months' time. It's just ridiculous. And then you find that the investor isn't getting the return on whatever they put in. And all of a sudden, things aren't going well. And you find they pull the plug. And that just leaves everyone just sort of scrabbling around, trying to find jobs, trying to figure out what to do next. And it's not sustainable. So it's just... I felt so horrified for those players. I just really felt for them.
Yeah, and it's great to see that, fingers crossed, hopefully the situation's been turned around and they are going to be able to keep their jobs. I don't know what it means for some of the other staff going forward who are let go, you know, like social media, comms, that kind of stuff.
I think they've kept their jobs. I think from what I've seen on social media, I think they've managed to get their jobs back. But I would agree, it just seemed, and I'm, you know, don't know, a big business person or anything, but it just seemed really naive to think you could suddenly go from being semi-pro to professional after pandemic. Like, that just seemed...
Of all the times to do it.
Wouldn't that have raised red flags? Like, was there no kind of... And I'm sure risk assessments are done, but surely there needs to be more robust risk assessments so that when a club goes professional in, like, September and then bust by December, there's something wrong with the business plan there and the business model.
The forecasting isn't adding up.
No, and they promised them long term. This was a long term commitment. These were long term contracts. They were promising to kind of develop a sustainable model. For me, a sustainable model isn't immediately going, almost immediately going semi-pro to professional.
Like that's not sustainable. Like you haven't, doesn't really feel like you've properly gotten your feet under the desk yet. So
there needs to be due diligence. Yeah. I think, I don't know what the FA are doing in terms of, I don't know. So I'm not going to sit here and criticize the FA for whatever they do behind the scenes to look at these investments. But I think there almost needs to be a situation that these investors put in this money up front to see you through that season. It can't just be on a week by week or a month by month basis that money is being provided to these clubs. You need to be able to at least sustain that period of a year. Otherwise players are going to be left in situations where you're out of the job within a couple of days, with a couple of days notice as well. And I think that was the most devastating part of that, is that the club would have known what direction they were going in. The investors weren't too happy with whatever was going on, and then gave them 2 days notice. It's just not,
before Christmas as well, of all the times of year. I mean, I know the FA's licensing criteria is quite strict because lots of clubs have failed to meet it. Lots of big clubs have failed to meet it because they haven't had the budgets. So there are certain things that they have to meet, but that's obviously given ahead of time, and circumstances can change, especially in the volatile world of the pandemic that we're living at the moment. But there it seems like there's a breakdown in communication somewhere, and things were unraveling and going, you know, downhill quite quickly. And it seems like not enough people were sort of brought in to potentially rescue it, mm-hmm, to stop it from enough getting to this point. Yeah.
But the other thing I wonder is, like, having a 49% ownership stakes in a club, like, maybe I don't know, maybe that's not the best way to go, because then if that goes bust, you're pretty screwed. Whereas if you've got, and I know it's not always easy to get investment in, but if it's spread out across more companies and you don't own quite such a heavy share, if it does get rocky, it's not going to completely collapse the club. So the fact that they kind of came in and bought 49% ownership, that's huge. And it especially when you're forecasting, like you say, there should be much more upfront money, wages. Like they said, became aware of it in November, I think it was. Shout out as well to Catherine Batt from the Daily Mail. She's done some really great work on this. And I know Tom Garry from the Telegraph and Emma Sanders from the BBC as well have been doing some stuff on it. And it was hard for journalists because no one was really saying anything.
And all the staff were essentially let go, so there's no one to talk to.
And I imagine
club.
A lot of those people had gotten a bit of a break because it was, you know, right before Christmas. So
yeah. I think one of the difficulties, I think, with investing in the Championship at this stage is that you really need to be in it for the long haul. It needs to be a situation that you don't just invest in the club for the year, because realistically, the Championship at this level, with the lack of people that we have it coming into the stadiums and the lack of social media, you know, a lot of the games aren't yet being shown live on the FA Player. You might get one a week or whatever it is. You're not going to be making a profit for a long time, and that might not be for 2, 3, 4, even 5 years down the line. So you're going to be investing into a club that is not going to make you money. So I think what you need is this real genuine investors who actually genuinely care about women's football to be investing, because if you're thinking about just making a quick buck, it won't be happening in the Championship.
I think there's also an important balance to be struck between ambition and reality. It's great to be ambitious, and Coventry United were hiring PR agencies to support, you know, getting press stuff out there, setting up interviews with players. They, you know, had radio coverage, exclusive radio coverage of their games that not many teams in the Championship were getting. So the ambition was great, but the reality is sometimes you can't buy that stuff if you don't have the budget to back it up.
Yeah, and as Jay Bradford said, like, there feels like there were other ways of going about this. Like, why didn't they sit everyone down and say, look, we're going to go back to semi-pro for 6 months, or we're going to go back to semi-pro for the rest of the season, whatever that might be. It's just, without that transparency, it's hard to know how you've gone from let's go professional to let's shut down the club in less than half a year.
And you've got to make smart business decisions. Like you said, we'd all love every single game in the Championship to be streamed, but that costs a lot of money. And so the reality is, well, we can only, you know, the FA can only afford to stream one a week, or you can get highlights of all the games. And, you know, it's really hard to do it all. And I think, like you said, it requires patience. But for me, the fear might be that what this proves is that you cannot succeed unless you have a big men's club, not only the finance, but the brand or whatever, backing you. And this is just a sign of the clubs that try and do it differently. I mean, Durham have been doing great, but
Lewis.
Yeah, I mean, they're joined to a men's side, but it's not traditionally big men's side. It almost feels like it's an example of why these great independent projects, people look at that and say, well, another example of you can't do it unless you're linked to a men's team.
Well, but you also sometimes see it when teams are linked to a men's team. The first thing to go for the business, if the business starts to struggle, is the women's team. And it's obviously what happened here with these investors. Business struggled, dropped the women's team. Sometimes still happens in the men's, in with men's teams involved in women's football. Team is struggling, drop the women's team. So yes, it has its benefits, but only if the men's club is super rich.
I think you're definitely at an advantage if you've got the backing of a Premier League club. Because I think, you know, when you look at the kind of resources, the wealth that the Premier League have, you know, and the sort of the propensity, the drive towards and getting their women's team sorted. I mean, the resources, the facilities, the doctors, the staff, the social media, the fitness, the strength and conditioning, the diet, the food that you provide, all those things cost a substantial amount of money. And I don't think without having that backing, really, unless you've got a massive, genuine investor who's happy to probably take a loss for a few years, I think it's going to be very difficult to succeed. And I think, you know, when you start to look at the kind of names now in the WSL, the ones that are struggling are the Birminghams. The ones that are sort of making it in the Championship are the Liverpool. So I think that is naturally where the leagues are going to go, that you're going to start to find the big Premier League men's equivalent in the WSL.
I wish Lewis Taylor lots of luck. Seems like a great guy. And I think he's in it for the right reasons. He's not a completely random person. He's already had work and supported clubs in the Midlands, shirt sponsor for Wolves Women. And I think he talked about some other stuff he's done in football in that part of the world. So, yeah, I hope it works out for him and the club as well. And, you know, everyone knows that running a football club is not cheap. So he himself has taken a massive risk by doing this. And you just hope that it you know, they get enough backing, enough sponsorship, whatever it may be, to sustain their big ambitious project. Because he said himself that he wants the club to be in the WSL and that's the ambition. So, you know, we hope that they take the right amount of time to get there.
Well, I also hope that the FA give them their points back, because at this rate, if they don't, they're going to be ended up in the National League, and I don't know how that's going to.
I'm very hopeful that their appeal has legs, so we shall wait and see. But I think they'll be able to get some points back.
My biggest issue is the amount of points, because if it's the same, I'm pretty sure it's the same in the men's league. If something like that happened, you'd be deducted 10 points, and they play what, 38 games. How is that equivalent to, you know, two thirds of those games are played in the women's league, but the points deduction is the same. So it's not, for me, the right equivalent. I think you're right. I'm not sure they'll get all the points back, but I just think that the 10 points just seems massive.
Yeah. I think it's just such a weird clause, because it's like the force majeure clause, which means that they can only get those points back if there's some kind of a natural disaster that takes place. And unless Coventry can
COVID?
Prove, potentially, maybe, yeah.
You're the lawyer, so
I mean, I won't.
Yeah,
go too...
we'll let you build a case on that. But I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that they can plead their case. Let's touch on some more positive news. Just for Christmas as well, it was announced that Barclays have agreed a new 3-year deal with the WSL and the Premier League, which includes sponsorship of the Women's Championship for the first time, title sponsorship as well. They're going to be staying on as the official banking partner, I think, of the Premier League. A lot of the deal includes massive grassroots football programs, which they've done before. They still have their girls football campaign in England, which they do with schools, trying to get every girl in England the ability to play football at school, which is massive. But this one also did up the value of the sponsorship deal in itself, which is huge for women's sport, because not a lot of women's sport really does get a lot of rights fees, to put it bluntly, actually gets cash for it. A lot of it is tied up in marketing spend and other things. It's actually really hard to demand, you know, a check and some money that goes right into the pocket of the league. So this is massive. But focusing on the Championship as well, because it's getting a title sponsor for the first time, I mean, what do you think the difference could be for you as a Championship player and this deal?
I think it could be massive. I think, you know, obviously we just touched on how Coventry have been. And I think, you know, some of that money is going to filter down to the individual clubs. And I think one of the focuses for us, I think, has definitely got to be the standard of referees and also the standard of the pitches as well. You know, I don't want to touch on what happened this weekend at Sunderland.
Well, how long was that trip?
Just a mere 7.5 hours.
Where are you next week?
We're actually in Durham. Yeah, just down the road. Interesting.
Scheduling leaves a lot to be desired.
Thank you, FA. But I think, you know, when you look at the sounds of some of the pitches and also the quality of the referee, and I think that's definitely going to be a focus for the championship. And also, I think having more games streamed live, because I think that exposure will also help.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see where some of that financing goes, because we know that with the TV rights deal, the FA have been quite transparent about the way that the revenue is going to be split between the two leagues. So it'd be interesting to know what happens here. I mean, anything you're looking forward to about this new deal, Rachel?
Well, I know we touched on the Coventry issue and how that might impact future investment. But being a title sponsor of the championship could actually attract more investment, you know, giving it even more validity is the wrong word, but, you know, making it an even more attractive investment to invest in clubs in the championship. So hopefully,
well, it
I'd
gives
like to
a professional aura to what is a semi-professional league. And that's really important to ensure the strength of the whole pyramid.
Yeah. So hopefully it leads to more investment for clubs and more solidity, I guess, at some of these clubs.
Yeah. And I think it definitely will. Looking ahead to this weekend as well, I'm going to be at Boreham Wood for Arsenal Reading. You're going to be
in sunny Durham,
back in the north that you love so well, and hopefully the game will be on.
Thank you for that. If everyone could just keep their fingers crossed, that would be great.
And no dodgy 11th hour pitch inspections. Where are you going to be, Rachel?
I'm at Man United on Saturday and Soph is at Everton. And then Soph's at Aston Villa. And then she's at Everton the next day and I'm at Leicester.
Nice. A little round trip.
Double.
Yeah, get cocking up the mileage. That's it for today's episode of Upfront, our first episode back in the new year in 2022. If you've got any questions for us, or if you've got the cheat codes for beating Barcelona, please tweet us at Football Ramble, at Floyd Tweet, at Girls on the Ball for Rachel, or at Morgie_89. We will see you all next week.
Football Ramble Presents is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.